Well, thank you for joining for this glorious last presentation I have to do here for this event. I'll be traveling to I'm a little bit tired, which is why I'm almost falling over. So we're going to talk about cloud-enabling your Windows Store apps with mobile services. So who here was at the keynote this morning for Developer Pro that did mobile services? So mostly everyone and a few people perhaps asleep and just didn't want to put their hands up, I guess. So we'll sort of, this session basically takes what we did there within 10 minutes, but it shows you all the things that we pre-provisioned and pre-configured. So basically by the end of this session, you'll be able to do everything that you saw in the keynote, but also you'll be able to use some other things like scheduled scripts. And we've also got Renan Christoph. Would you like to introduce yourself, Renan? Maybe? Can we grab this mic on for a sec? Yeah, Renan built the Tech Days application, and You're going to talk a little bit more in depth about that for us.
Yeah, so at the end, so Nick is going to start with going more into depth of what he was talking about during the keynote. And at the end, I'm going to go deep dive in some code and show you how the backend of the Windows or the Tech Days app is working on Windows Azure Mobile Services. So it will also be a moment if you have questions later on to come to the front or to ask them during the session to know, yeah, how did we build it? So Enjoy.
Cool. Thank you. So let's get started. So we're going to talk about Windows Azure Mobile Services. You've already had a pretty good overview of that, so we won't dwell on the basics. We'll jump into some scenarios here. We'll look at data. We'll look at push notifications from both an insert trigger, but also from a scheduled script. We'll look at how we configured push notifications. So there was a configuration piece. You just saw the outcome of that. I'll show you step by step how you actually do that for your own applications. There's a few steps. It takes about 10 minutes, which is why I didn't do it on stage this morning. Auth as well, the Twitter Auth integration. That too requires some configuration of a Twitter application, so I'll show you how to do that. And then I'll show you the scheduler, so you can schedule tasks to run at a scheduled interval. In this case, we'll pull Twitter and send a tile update with some tweets. We may also look at SendGrid, and then we'll jump on into Christoph's demo. So we covered this morning, but I'm sure, you know, as a brief refresher, because I'm sure you haven't heard it enough today, mobile services, turnkey backend solution for your mobile apps. If you're building a mobile app, certainly check it out. iOS, Android, Android only just recently announced yesterday, Windows Store, and Windows Phone. One other cool thing we announced yesterday was support for mobile services in the Northeast Asia data center. So now you can hit data centers across US, Europe, and Asia for your deployments. Core tenants of mobile services, we talked about structured storage, server scripts, auth, notifications, scheduler. We've also got logging and diagnostics, and also the capability to scale out our solution. So this one is going to be a little bit of a refresher for you, but what I'd really like to show you is how you provision a mobile service. We didn't step through the wizard in the keynote today, so let's have a look at that. So you hit new in the Windows Azure portal here. Let me zoom in a bit. 125, new, compute, mobile service, create. And here we say Tech Days, BO, clock. That should be unique, yes. Now, the next step that we do after we've identified our subdomain for our mobile service, this is where our backend will be spun up. So we either use an existing database or a new SQL database. Existing DB basically makes it so you can have multiple mobile services pointed at the one database, and then it just means you've got, you know, less use of SQL database, which can have a cost associated to it depending on what subscription you've got to Windows Azure. So it's a cost savings mechanism for lower throughput applications. I'm going to select one of my subscriptions, and you can see here mobile services is actually in preview, but we are already rolled out across all of these data centers. So we'll use North Europe. Next thing is saying, since I've targeted an existing DB, we need to actually select a DB server and DB for that. The little warning up the top saying, hey, Nick, you've selected your web tier to go into North Europe, but at the moment you've got an East US DB selected. So we'll go to North Europe. I won't click on the show password. There we go. I can't use any of my old jokes, and I really, that was all the material I had, so it's going to be a rather dry session. We'll see what I can come up with. Look at this. Why is this image not showing? What's going on there? Could not get metrics in Keynote. That's okay. So what it's doing now is it's actually going off and provisioning this mobile service. So it's going and creating that REST API, which we can utilize from our client applications. It's going and provisioning a schema within the SQL database that we chose, and it's using that to petition our mobile service. But you can see there that it's, for what you get out of it, it's quite an easy and fast operation to invoke. So we're now within the portal. We saw some of this morning. So the application which I used as a base this morning was actually this quick start. So if you wanted to do your first 101 type mobile service, you'd come in, you'd go straight to here, you'd select create a new Windows Store app, you'd install the mobile services client SDK, you'd click a button to create a to-do item table, and then you'd simply download the application. So let's download this one. And we won't spend too much time in this, other than just to show you that it's all wired up already, because this is what we built this morning. Extract this out, spin it up, let's close that one. And what you'll see here is it is the same to-do list application, but it's already wired. You've got your mobile service client there. It's pointing at your mobile services endpoint. It's got your app key. If we jump into the main page, you can see that it's got all your CRUD operations implemented here, your inserts, your queries, and your updates. So I won't bore you guys to death by walking through that again, unless anyone wants it. Does one person in the room want it for the rest of everyone? I think, oh no, that guy's scratching his head. Okay, I thought it was a hand up there for a second. Okay, so that's that. So let's just do this, and actually let's turn on Fiddler here so you can get a little bit more depth as to what's going on. I think we need to attach maybe to that Windows 8 app. What did I call this guy? Tech Days Beer O'Clock. Okay, it's already selected. So this will add some more depth on what you've seen prior. Let's go and say, let's add QWERTY UI. Can do it. Add a couple items. And essentially what the mobile services client is doing is under the hood it's performing all the serialization of that entity for us and passing that up as a JSON object to our mobile service. Why did I not get you? Okay, I'm probably not capturing HTTPS traffic. Yeah. Okay. Yes, I do trust this crazy root certificate. Let's run this guy again. So one of the interesting things is, whilst we do have client SDKs for a lot of these items, you know, the iOS, the Android, the Windows Store, and the Windows Phone applications, you can still go out and build clients using, you know, other technologies, other stacks that go out and call into this, because it is simply a REST API. You can see in this case that we've performed, that's a certificate thing, so this is should be a, is this a post here? Accept post. So this is the post of our entity, and we passed up our QWERTY UI item. You can see that it's using the application key. It's setting a header here. This is just an installation ID to uniquely identify the installed app, and there's our JSON payload. What we get back in the response here is you can actually see that it comes back with an ID. So the ID is returned by the mobile service, and any other fields which you may have attached to your mobile service when you passed it up, they'll actually be added to this as well. So if you added a date added field or a user ID field on the server side, that'll come back and it'll be rehydrated into your entity if your entity supports those fields. So that's that. We'll just close this. I just thought I'd give you something of value on the getting started demo. So let's talk a little bit about the structured storage under the hood. So it is, in fact, a SQL database that this is being stored in. It's the Windows Azure SQL database. And I believe Christoph will give you a bit more depth on that. He'll connect up and show you that. When we did select to reuse an existing DB, people often wonder, you know, how am I partitioning the data? What if two of my mobile services have a to-do item table? It partitions purely by schema, so you can see if I had app X and app Y, we'd partition that those two separate tables out by schema and restrict access to them, of course. In terms of managing that data, you can people say, hey, it's cool, I'm putting my data up there, I can see it in the portal, but maybe I want to do some more admin-y type things with it. Maybe I want to get that out of there, or maybe I want to run like Power Pivot or Power View over it. And you can manage it with a number of different mechanisms. You could use the portal, the SQL portal, SQL Management Studio, the REST API, or the command line tools that we've got. Next slide here. So this talks about service scripts. We did see some of that on insert operations, and we will see a little bit more of that today. But service scripts, they're essentially providing you a hook that executes in the CRUD operation pipeline. And what that means is you can write your own business logic. You can do all your server-side validation or whatnot that you want to do that makes your application unique. For instance, you wouldn't want to validate your entities just on the client side. You also want to do them on the server side. Pretty standard sort of client-server type implementation concept there. On the server side, we do have access to a number of modules or globals. We've got a request module. That module allows you to perform HTTP, so you might call a third-party service. We'll do that today. We've got a console object for essentially logging and logging like warnings, info, anything that you may need for debugging. We saw the push namespace today. Tables is utilized to get a handle to a table and iterate through a collection or query data or insert data if you wanted to. MS SQL is more of a, if you want to write a query, so if you want to write a stored procedure, say, actually I got a sample here, MS SQL, we won't see this today, but I thought I'd drop it in so you can see at least what it would look like. But basically you can write raw SQL against your tables if you want to, but it's not really necessary for most applications. So that simple select statement could actually in fact be, you know, execute stored procedure X that you wrote that may perhaps do some kind of transaction across a couple tables or something like that. There is the Windows Azure Node SDK if you want to interact with Windows Azure Storage, and we've got a number of store partners available for doing things like sending email or doing sort of real-time messaging and that sort of thing. We may see SendGrid if we have time today. So let's jump in and write a simple server script just to show you a little bit more than what we did today. So I'll jump into data, hit to-do item, jump into script. Now, I pasted in a lot of script today, so let's write this one. Let's say item.text.length. So I'm going to perform some simple validation here if it's less than 5. Now, you may be wondering initially, where's this item.text? Well, the item parameter that's passed in here is actually the item that you're pushing up on insert. So I'm pushing up a to-do item, and if you see the definition of this, I've got a to-do item defined with an ID, text, and complete field, but I've also flagged this with this attribute to say, well, I want it serialized, and we saw it in Fiddler before, I want the serialization to be lowercase, and that just makes it nicer to work with in terms of, look at that. That makes it nicer to work with when you're on JavaScript as far as, you know, convention's concerned, uppercase first, lowercase there. So if it's less than 5 here, we'll say request. So using this request controls, request.execute will perform the insert, whereas you can also write to the response stream. So in this case, this is going to be an invalid case on my simple validation, and I'll say status codes.badRequest. And we may say too short in this case, else rather than you guys will love my, who here is a JavaScript developer or a Node developer? Anyone in the room? One guy? Me right here. Okay. People often ask, are we going to have C# support for writing these scripts? It's a frequently asked question, so it's something we're considering at the moment. We figured JS is something common that, you know, .NET devs for phone, for Win8, but also Android and iOS developers, that'll be sort of some common ground that all of these guys would have at least programmed in JavaScript at some time, which is why it was chosen for the server scripting engine. But we are certainly hearing that more people would want C# there, so we're looking into that. But with that said, that script is now live, so 5 should pass. Good, and 4 should throw our exception, and if the debug is still attached, I gotta click the save button. There we go. You can see there's our exception come back, and you can handle this mobile service invalid operation exception. Okay, so next I think we return to the deck. That was my simple validation demo. Any real questions coming up here? Feel free to like shout them out as we go, and it'll keep me awake. Or is everyone else just falling asleep right now? Come on, guys. I was up at like 1 o'clock this morning. Okay. All right, so let's return to the deck. Okay. All right, some countries, they just yell questions out before they're even asked, and they don't even put their hand up. So it's interesting to see the different places you go, the different cultures, and how you'll sort of handle these things. This is, you got a little sort of feeling for this today when we sent a push notification, but there is actually a process that's followed here. This is the one for Windows 8 apps, and I like to put this diagram in because it basically frames in context the flow that's actually executing when we send a push notification from any cloud service, be it mobile services or, say, web API on a Windows Azure website. What we've got here are the two boxes, the green boxes down the bottom. They're essentially things that are provided out of the box. The one on the left, the notification client platform, that's responsible for rendering your tiles and your toast notifications. The Windows Push Notification Service is a service that will deliver notifications to your target clients. And the blue bits are things that we have to go and program as developers. And as devs, we need to know how the interfaces work between the blue and the green boxes. So it's a three-step process. The first thing we do is we request a channel URI. So to do this, we basically call into the WinRT API, get a channel, take that channel, and pass it back up to our cloud service. Now, to send a push notification, there's a number of ways you can do this. You could go and do it event-based like we did in the demo this morning, or you could perhaps go off and use the Windows Azure Scheduler to do something on a time basis, because not all the time is it appropriate for you to be sending a notification on, say, an insert or an update. You may have time-based solutions where you're perhaps aggregating RSS feeds and then sending content down to users perhaps daily or every few hours. But essentially the main point to note is we pass off this channel URI for this particular application to our cloud service. And then we pull that channel when we determine, hey, it's the right time to notify the users for this particular content. Then to send the notification, there's actually an authentication step. So there's an OAuth2 flow that has to occur. And then you compose an XML payload and then post that payload with the auth token that you receive back from push notification service to deliver the payload. So it's actually, like, if you go and write that, has anyone written that, like, without the use of mobile services or any third-party sort of SDKs? Anyone done push notifications? One person? Take a little while to figure out, a couple people, take a little while to figure out the XML templates and the auth process for WNS? Yeah? A couple days? Maybe? You know, you're an epic developer. It took you 15 minutes. Half an hour? Okay, did you implement like the OAuth handshake and no? Okay, so you might have, what do you use, a NuGet package or something? The WNS recipe? Yeah, I wrote that. Yeah, so that WNS recipe is a nice abstraction on top of that that deals with the OAuth and the XML payload composition. That one took me quite a few weeks to write to support all the template types. So just know that this makes it quite fast and straightforward. Otherwise, you're dealing with XML and OAuth2. So push notifications here. How do we do this for WNS in mobile services? We integrate to WNS to provide toast tile, badge, and raw notifications. We showed Toastile Badge this morning. Raw notifications is essentially a means by which you can send a data payload to an application. So it may be to send, you know, updated product info. It may be to cause synchronizations of lists and those sorts of things. Just your data, you send it and you handle it in the client app. The portal captures your WNS client secret and package SID, and that's part of the authentication process. From that, we manage all the rest under the hood. And push.wns, as you saw today, provides a nice abstraction to send your push notification. So what we'll do now is we'll actually build out the insert demo that we did, but we'll do that from scratch. So there's a few things in that starter application that I did prior to the keynote, and I'd like to show you how you could do that to implement it successfully in your application. So the first thing that I did was to configure my client app to support wide tile logos. So if we come here, you'll see somewhere, Tech Days Beer O'Clock, it's actually only a square logo. If you want a wide logo, you actually have to explicitly define that within your package manifest. And we can do that by just selecting pictures and getting something that's 310 by 115. A beautiful piece of artwork created by me. It's about all my years of study could produce. So we'll take that, and that's now defined a wide logo for our application. The other thing is, if you want Toast capable, if you want lock screen notifications, you come and turn them on in there. So let's hit save on that. So that's part of the client config. The next thing that you may have seen before that I was doing here as some of you were walking in was I was just submitting or reserving an app name in the Windows Store, appdev.microsoft.com. So I've created one here called Tech Days Mobile. Now, the client application requires some client credentials to successfully complete this OAuth flow, and they'll actually turn up in this packaging tab here. And to do that, you need to pull them from the portal. So the simple way to do it is to right-click on your project, hit Store, Associate App with Store, sign in. There we go. So once I've signed in, so this account has a Store subscription associated with it. It's going to pull the list of applications, and then I'm simply going to select the app, and it's going to pull in that configuration and update this item here for us. If we come down, where is it? Tech Days, what do I call it? Beer O'Clock or something? Was it the first one? Where is it? Did I miss it? I can't be that. I haven't had anything to drink yet. Oh, Tech Days Mobile. Okay. Updating the list. Well, thank you. That's new. I've never had to update the list while I'm in the list. It's sort of funny the things that randomly happen. There we go. Tech Days Mobile, you can see there the creds here, so it's actually pulling in something completely different. Bam, hit associate, that's done. So that's one of the other things I did on the client. The last thing that I did here was to actually write the code that requests the channel now. The stuff I dropped in during the keynote was a simplified version of what you should do. What you should do is more like this. So let me resolve some of these namespaces here. Application data. I think that's it. It's await, so this should be async. Now, channels expire, right? They expire approximately every 30 days, but if mobile services needs to purge channels that it's maintaining, it will purge them. So the recommendation is to request a channel every time your application launches and update your back end. One thing that you should have on here is expiry, and you should be tracking that, but I've simplified it here for this example. So same as this morning, request a channel from the WinRT API. Take your channel DTO, set the channel URI there. There is also channel expiry. Let me show you that. Expiration time, so you should really add a property for that. This thing here is around essentially determining whether we need to perform an insert or an update. So it's clearer here if this is the first time we're running this, this local setting is going to be null. So I perform an insert, and as we saw in Fiddler, this channel DTO comes rehydrated after the insert with the actual ID that was assigned on the server side. So after insert, I set this local value, so in this case it'll be 1, and then the next time the application runs or hits this code block, that's going to be 1 that's dropped in here, and this is now 1, so we say that we're going to do an update. So it's a simple way to stop adding duplicate channels in your server-side component. So that's that piece done. As for the server pieces, we come in here. We added a channel table before. Now, in the auth demo that we did, basically we went and changed these, but you can change them on creation as well. We'll talk about those in a little bit. We create the table. The last thing that we need to do is actually find these credentials. There's no nice associate with store type operation built into mobile services. So we do actually have to go to the dev center, select our application, go to advanced features. This is like always fun to navigate. I'm sure it sucks with the resolution. Let me try and do that there. So advanced features, and then hit push notifications, live connect services. And eventually down 4 levels deep, let me go back. I click that pretty fast on you. And now we are in limbo land on the white page. Let's click into that guy again. You can do it. Hit authenticating your service. Identifying your app has the client creds, which we dropped in through the associate process. But we take the package SID, and this is all part of OAuth, and you drop it in the package SID. You just got to make sure you hit the right ones, because the order that they're presented here is actually the reverse to what they are in the portal. That's like a gotcha that gets some people. Tried to get them to change the portal design so it matched on both sides of the teams, and neither of them would do it. Or perhaps they did and both reversed it, and then I just screwed it for everyone. I don't know. So there's our credentials. So that's done now. So with that, the last thing simply becomes sending a push notification. Why can you not get my metrics? It's okay. We'll come back to that if there's an issue. So I'm just going to use a Ninja snippet. Who here thought the snippets were cool? This is a favorites bar in Internet Explorer. How do I copy this code to my clipboard? Don't you think that's cool? It's like an IE pro tip. It's basically JavaScript. You can see JavaScript that executes window.clipboard data, set data. And then I've got an encoded piece of code that it pulls out, drops in my clipboard, can paste it in. You find these sort of little funky things so you don't have to context switch between notepads when you do these things. But anyhow, so this insert is a little bit more robust than the one I showed in the keynote. I streamlined the keynote one. Essentially, on request, we're performing the insert. You've got a success and error function that can execute. So on error, I'm responding with 500, but I could do some other stuff that I'd want to do here. On success, I actually respond such that the client can do what it wants. Then I send the notification passing the item in. Again here, we say get table channel, so that gets a handle to the channel table. We call read, and on success, that returns the channels. We then iterate through each channels using for each, and then pass that channel in to this function, which simply calls send toast text 04. So one thing I'd like to show you, actually I'll show you when we get to tiles, it's probably better. Send toast text 04 here targets a channel URI, and this particular template type has 3 lines of text. So let's save this. And with that, it is live, and we can spin this guy up now. So the first thing we should see is over on our desktop here, our tile is now wide. I'm gonna pin it up there so we can use it for a tile update later on. Here's our client application. Interestingly enough, the default template that you download doesn't have snap view, so that's something you can implement if you like. But we can say, hello world, you did not see this before. There you go. So there's your toast, right? So there's certainly a few more steps required to get you know, the experience which I showed you today. But the key points really are that the simple code, you do some configuration that takes you, you know, 10 minutes up front. But then when it comes to writing the code is incredibly simple. Okay, so what have we got next here on my magic bag of tricks? I think we're going to talk auth. So auth-wise, authenticate Microsoft account, Twitter, Facebook, Google. There are ways you can go and integrate with custom identity providers if you want to. Christoph may talk a little bit about that maybe later on, but there certainly is the capability to do that. It's not as neat because it's not integrated into the portal. But that being said, permission-wise, we've got four options. You can essentially have those CRUD operations, each one individually, set to a specific level. So everyone is obviously everyone. Anyone with the application key is that application key that's in the mobile services client. Only authenticated users is if your user has authenticated using one of these IDPs. And only scripts and admins means only your server-side scripts or only admins with the administrative key. There's actually two keys. I'll show you that when we get back to the portal. Can perform an action. So that's maybe something you apply to a delete operation or something like that, something which may be critical data. On top of this, you can actually go and implement more granular control if you want to implement an authorization policy or whatnot. The parameters to your scripts have a user parameter, and that has a few attributes on it, one being the level. So you could be admin, authenticated, or anonymous. And you've also got a user ID, which is a unique ID back from that identity provider. On top of that, you can call get identities, which will return you the tokens from that particular identity provider for that user. So if you're using Facebook, you could then use them to hit the Facebook Graph API. So with that, I think we'll show you how the Twitter demo is actually achieved. So let's go to identity. Hit OK here. Now Twitter, let's see here. All right, and again, that one should not be there. Or, what's this JavaScript stuff? Java? Android? Okay. Let's get rid of some of them. Okay, so returning back, let's go to the Twitter Dev API. That was actually my first time writing JavaScript in a while, and I gotta say, I am a fan of Microsoft Stack after revisiting that stuff, but you know, they don't pay me to say that. That's how I feel. But then again, if I'd been developing in Android for a long time, then hello, we're going to go to Surface Glass here. Get rid of that. I must have hit some kind of shortcut. So this is our Twitter app. Sorry about that random thing. I don't know where I was going with that. There was a story there. Oh yes. So I'm going to fill out these while I tell you a story. So the emulator for Android is essentially, I was remote desktoped into that machine during the keynote to make sure that I still had internet connectivity from it, because it took like 7 minutes for me to spin that guy up, because I was using GPU emulation or something like that to make it fast and responsive when I was clicking things in it. There is a snapshot option in that emulator, but that didn't have the nice fluid sort of transition. So because I was sitting there stressing I was going to have to spin up this 7-minute wait when I only had a 10-minute slot. So it was pretty scary stuff for me anyhow. So this is the one important thing, right? This is just standard descriptions. Callback URL for your auth flow requires your mobile service URL, essentially. So I'm going to go in here and grab this guy, Tech Days Belgium. And we come back, and this is just so the OAuth flow with Twitter knows where to redirect to, and that is our techdaysbeer@azuremobile.net. We agree to the terms and conditions because we read all of them, and then we get one of these guys done, 1811 TRMO. What's going on, the DU? You think that looks right, guys? Yeah, there we go. Live action. So we'll take this consumer key now, and we'll drop back to our portal, hit the identity tab, and we'll drop in Twitter, and we'll drop in consumer secret here as well. Hit save, hit yes. And now with that, that's what actually happened and went into that Twitter configuration. So again, a few steps, but it's a one-time thing that you need to do. So let's drop back to the... We finish at 45, right? Yeah, is that right? Okay, cool. Okay. So I want to give Christoph 15 minutes to walk through some of the cool stuff he's got. I think we're good for time. I'm going to show you something a little bit additional here, just add some more value for you. So if I come in here, I can do stuff like I can say item.userid is equal to user.userid. Now, you'll note that the IntelliSense support here is quite frankly, in my opinion, pretty crappy, right? You don't really get much, and it's not nice. It is something we're working on. So when you're exploring these APIs in the server-side script, my number one tip is hit this question button. It's contextual help, and it'll take you through and show you some of these core operations that you can do, and you'll sort of get a little understanding of it like that. And then the other place that I'd recommend you go is to windowsazure.com, select, and they've recently released an update to this guy, so bear with me while I stumble through it. Documentation, services, mobile services, and then here there's a whole bunch of step-by-step tutorials that go through some of these things we're doing. And if you want to see what those server-side script APIs are and what's on the user object, you can click through to the script reference. And if we say select here and go user, you can come down and you can see, okay, well, there's the get identities thing, which we touched upon briefly before. There's a user ID property and whatnot. So that's where it is today, but we're working towards making it at a nicer development experience here and also providing some better ALM sort of stuff for you as well. So that with that, we should get our user ID. Let's spin this guy up. I think I'm missing the one thing here, which is to actually log in. So let's log in. I think this morning I showed you that without login fails because we've already... No, I haven't, have I? Jeez, I'm glad I did GUEL in the keynote because I'm butchering this one. We forgot to do... Does anyone know what we forgot to do? There's a bowl of water for the person who picks it up. Does anyone know what we forgot? One thing. So we configured our Twitter secrets on the server side. We've added login here, but we still haven't restricted permissions on our table. So that is key, obviously, to locking it down. So let's go and drop this to authenticated users. And again, they don't all have to be the same. You could have, higher level permissions if you wanted. So for the one that was only scripts and admins, let me just show you where that is while I'm here. If you drop back up to the top level of your mobile service here, hit manage keys. This is the application key you distribute in your app. This is the master key that relates to the only scripts and admins option. You can, of course, regenerate these if they're compromised as well. Okay, so with that, let's do Twitter. I will not subject you to the password joke again. But I will say we're going to do a Twitter demo. So if you want to tweet stuff at me, we might get you on a live tile here in a minute. So with that, we're now authorized. And if I put in some cool to-do text there, we're still getting that. But if we return to our portal now, what you'll see is we've now got the user ID stored within this table. So there it is. You'll see the records that were there previously are null, but now we've got this Twitter ID. So you can do some sort of cool things here. If I were to say I want to change my read operation to say perhaps I want to filter so I can only see data that's my user ID, you can say, what are you doing down there? That's a better query.where, and then we can pass in a filter here that basically says user ID on this object, which is to-do item, is equal to user.user ID. So in this case, now this filter is live. So when I execute this read, you'll see now, rather than getting all the items, I'm only going to get that last item turn up in my list of items on the right there. So it's a good way to filter data per individual user. Someone was waiting for me to press the thing there, but there you go. So you see that? Now it's not returning all those other items. So that's a little bit more depth that may be of use to you for your scenarios. So with that, I think we're back to the... We did that one. This one, I will not subject you to anything other than the examples of what you can do with the scheduler, and we'll talk about how you can execute it within the portal context. But this essentially allows you to execute on a schedule. Doing tasks on insert isn't always appropriate for many applications. So some examples of where you'd use this is perhaps purging old data. So if you add channels that are expired, you may run a job that executes every day or every couple days that goes through your channels table and deletes anything where the expiry is less than now. You may poll and aggregate third-party feeds from Twitter, RSS feeds, or blogs, news readers, those types of applications. That's a good fit for this. You can process and resize images. You could send push notifications at a given time of day if someone was perhaps subscribed to something, you know, to be notified between 9 and 10 a.m. type thing. And we can, of course, execute these scripts on a schedule or on demand if it's something that doesn't run, you know, at a frequent pattern. So we'll drop to a demo of that. Making good time here. So that is essentially the scheduler option here. One other thing I wanted to point out here, who here has an Azure subscription? Did you guys know about the language capability here? One guy? I know you do. Anyone else? Do you guys want to see what this looks like in another language and I can stumble around with it for a little bit? What language would you like? Spanish. It needs to be something that you guys can read so I can... which one? Spanish? Spanish? Okay. Espanol? Okay. Okay. Here we go. So let's do that. So that's something that's happened. We've just dropped in support for a number of new languages recently as well. And here we go. So scheduler, programmador, that sounds right. Yes? I guess so. Let's do that. Create a new programmador. So this is our scheduler job. So I'm going to call this check feeds. Can run on two ways. Okay, we're going to have to roll back out of this. Bad idea. But I think it proves the point. Everything is localized, and we've done that, you know, so people don't have to always, you know, default to English if they don't want to. Check feeds. Okay, you like it now. That's interesting. Our schedule can run on a minute basis. We can go on hours, days, months. Let's go on minute. Or you can run on demand, which is, you know, not on a schedule, obviously. We create it. It's going to create a placeholder script, and it's going to be disabled. If I click in here, you'll see it's never run. There's our schedule. I can jump in, hit script, and here's a default template. So I can hit run once here. I'd like to show you this because this is the console object. And console.warn or console.log, for instance, are very useful if you're debugging your script on the server side. You can just come to the logs tab and see, you know, your debug or trace statements. So returning back to this, let's do the Twitter thing. So keep it appropriate if you're tweeting right now. let's check feed. Let's drop this guy in and walk through this a little bit. Okay, so you'll note that this is all red, and that's because my entry point here doesn't match the name of the job. So by convention, that needs to not be S, but check feeds, and now we're good. So I'm calling into this. Now, it is running Node on the back end, so you do have access to a number of Node modules like Request, Crypto, and a bunch of other things, Azure Node SDK. There's a list of them in the reference that you can go and look at. But require request just means we can perform HTTP outbound. And what I'm doing here in get updates and notify is saying, hit the Twitter API, search for Cloud Nick, and the most recent two tweets. And what I do here is on response, I parse out the results from the body, so a list of tweets, and I iterate through those tweets and execute this function. This function simply sends a notification and passes in the tweet object. This code you're familiar with already, where we get the channels, read all the channels, iterate through each one, and then send a push. So in this case, I'm doing a tile-wide small image and text 04. I'm targeting the individual channel that's been passed in, but I'm using the tweet object, so some data that we've collected from a third-party service to add value to our application. I'm pulling the profile image URL, so yes, I will know who you are if you are able to tweet without an internet connection in here. We know the user, so we know who you are, and we know what you tweeted. So I will find you. Simple API again, as I said. What I'd like to show you is just a little piece on MSDN. Stay on this page. Let's go like this. The girl in the little tile this morning was not my girlfriend. It was a girl I found online, and there she is. So she's from the documentation here. And these are the different template types you've got for wide tiles. So I think, or square and wide tiles. We're using tile-wide text image and text 04. So if we do this, this is sort of where you'd go to find a tile that matches what you want to do with your application. And there's a whole bunch of them. Like if you're doing perhaps a social app with a bunch of friends, you'd use this one. This is a peak, so it has images, then it pops up with the blow one and some text. And that's essentially how you find which one you want. Then you just take the name of it, and then this one says, well, hey, I'm one image with two lines of text, small image to the right, one line of text, the second line of text. So back in my mobile service here, one image, one line of text, two line of text. And that's simply it. There's more detailed documentation in the reference docs, of course. So that's where I like to go to find the right template for what I'm trying to do. So let's hit enable on this guy. So this guy will run every 15 minutes. And so I think the next time, it doesn't run like 15 minutes from now when I start, but it goes on the interval. So I think we've got about 14 minutes to kill. So does anyone have any questions? No? Yeah, sure. Yeah, so push for Apple and Android. We have push.gcm for Apple and Android, APNS for Apple, Google Cloud Messaging for Android. And those namespaces are separated out just by, you know, push dot whatever it the provider is for push, GCM, APNS, MPNS for Windows Phone. If you come over to the push tab here, Apple requires a certificate and a feedback script to execute if you want a feedback script. Google Cloud Messaging just requires an API key, and I actually used that this morning as well. But that's essentially how it works. And again, they're all documented in this service script reference. If we go to push here, you'll see that as we come down, you've got these modules, and you can click through to them to see examples of how to use them. So that's a good question. I won't subject you to waiting for 15 minutes. That was just a joke, although we could have done karaoke or something like that. I do have it here, and I was playing it by myself in the hotel the other day. It got boring pretty soon because I had no beer in my minibar. But let's hit run once on this guy. So this is executing in an on-demand fashion. And if we've done everything right, we should see a tile pop up here at some point. And if we've done something wrong, then I apologize. It's been a long day. You can do it. Come on now. See if there's any errors here. Didn't factor time in for making mistakes. Did I get a channel? Yeah, I got toast already, don't I? Let's do a little bit of live action here. So we can do essentially success colon function dash response. This is where you get to see my miraculous, if it works, JavaScript skill function E, say, be sort of cool if we got them to do the nice syntax cleanse, wouldn't it? Does anyone see what the problem is with this puppy? No, it's not that, sorry. Function E. Where are we going wrong? That is that one. Then we have this, which takes a success. And what are you doing there? That's better. Is that right? Success. Error. I think that's right. Let's try and save it. We'll see if I did okay there. It looks like something's not liking this one here. I may have one extra on the end, but let's go back to logs. Expected token closing brace. Oh, come on, Nick. Okay. I am missing a closing brace. Got those guys. Let me see here. Do you guys see it? What's the... Got one too many, did I? Yes. Amazing. This is the audience interaction I like. Should probably check that nothing there. Go back, let's go to logs. I won't dwell on this too much more. So it's saying it's been sent. So this is actually the response from WNS saying, yes, it was received, but it hasn't actually delivered it to us yet. So WNS may actually take it and throttle this if we're sending too much traffic to an individual channel. But in this case, you know, we haven't sent too much. So perhaps WNS is getting slammed by something, but it should still scale out and deliver that result. So, not too sure why it's not liking us today. I can check if our toast is still working. But then I think I may just move. You guys did not see that. Oh, there it is. Techmark 2. So, bit of a delayed delivery. You saw part of my password in the search term there, so do not tell anyone, okay? We're going to have to change that now since this is recorded. Okay. All right, so that's the scheduler and some real-time live-action debugging, which basically just turned out that it was just a delayed delivery. So, yeah, key point, you know, it's not something that you should expect to be delivered immediately. WNS will deliver it as it can. The received status that it gives you is saying, yes, I've got it, and now I'll pass it on at some point in hopefully the near future. So with that, the last thing I'd like to show you here is essentially the scaling. So scaling-wise, we've got a few sort of things here. I've already pumped it up here, and I'll drop it back down in a second. Actually, let's do that. Let's drop to reserved, from reserved back to free. So the free tier is essentially you're running on shared hosting, on shared cores. You are throttled to 165 meg of outbound data per day. You can send as much data up as you want. That 165 meg is actually across all your entire subscription for all free offerings. So if you had, say, you get 10 free mobile services running in shared mode, everyone gets that. You get 165 meg of outbound traffic across all 10 of those per day. If you wish to exceed that, you need to scale up. And this is, you know, when your application requires more throughput, and Christoph may talk about that with the Tech Days app. You can simply come in and hit reserved. we're very good within the portal in telling you that, hey, this is going to cost you money, particularly if you're using the free trial account, which you can get. So if you never click something like this, you should not get a bill on the free trial or whatnot. So we hit yes. Then we say, well, hey, how much do we want to scale this out? Do I just want one instance or two instances? Or do I want 10 instances? And since my manager pays my bill, I'll just sit on 10. And we've got web or business edition here as well as far as the DB is concerned. So you can actually scale that DB all the way up to 150 gig if you wanted to. Hitting save. Let's see how fast this does this. So this is like taking my server scripts, my web tier, deploying it across 10 instances in reserve mode from shared core to reserved core. 10 of them, done. Like, that's a couple seconds, right? Pretty powerful stuff, right? Yeah? Awesome. Hey. All right, so live action, there we go. We can also scale it down pretty quick. So, you know, you may need Tech Days Belgium needs to run. There's a lot of people here today. You may need to scale up. That's the type of scenarios where you can use that. So with that, we sort of covered most of the stuff I wanted to do, and I'd like to introduce AppStory and Christoph here to talk about how he used mobile services for a real application, which some of you may have used today.
So, to continue, I'm going to step back a little bit on what Nico's talking about in the beginning. So, I'm first going to show you the how the architecture looks like. So, it's on your machine. I'll skip it right away. I showed it through in the keynote already. So, you have in the middle Windows Azure Mobile Service. We have the Windows 8 app and the Windows Phone app. So, why did we use Windows Azure Mobile Services? Was to sync data between the multiple devices. So, the idea behind Windows 8 and Windows Phone is to get to be connected. So, which doesn't mean that you with your device are always online, but also that you have an app which can share data between those different platforms. So when you're using the app and you're building your agenda for the day, so you're choosing the sessions you want to follow, you can add them to your favorites, and those favorites are going to be synced to the backend. So to implement that, yeah, there were quite some challenges using Windows Azure Mobile Services, and I'm going to step you through those. Now, to start from the beginning, what Nick was talking about, you can decide when you create your mobile service to start with a new SQL database, or you can use an existing one. So I'm going to use a portal and go to my SQL databases and quickly show you how, if you really want to use Windows Azure Mobile Services based on an existing database, what the steps are that you can do, and the normal tools which you're used to work with, like Visual Studio and SQL Management Studio, that you can still use those to connect to your database and start running queries and work with your data as you're used like you always used before. So the first thing we want to do is, if I take my... I've created a new SQL database. I've created one of 5 gigabytes. I was expecting a lot of load on the server, so 5 is going to be way too much. But anyway, just to be sure, I've created a web edition, 5 gigabytes. So how did I do that? I created first a new server. So it's a SQL server. It's reserved for me, so I can use it. So to connect to it with your SQL Management Studio, what you can do is you just take the name. You just open SQL Management Studio, you use your name.database.windows.net, and you log in with the administrator account you created on your database. Now you'll see that by default it's not going to work. Why? Because it says, yeah, you're not allowed to connect to this database because the firewall is blocking it. So to go to the portal, you will see that if we go to the server configuration, by default, the allowed services, which is the bottom part, says, okay, Windows Azure is allowed to connect to this database and use the data from this server. So the firewall is configured so that any machine which is running in Azure can connect to this server and do some queries on the database, but from the outside, it's not allowed. So if you want to do that, you see here some range of allowed IP addresses which you can allow access to connect. So by changing these values, you're opening up the firewall so that from outside you can connect to this database. So I'm going to add a rule which you should never add. So I'm going to open up the full range of IP addresses. But basically what it's showing here is also the IP address, which is my public IP address at this moment. But it tends to give some issues when you're on a public network. So I'm just going to open up everything just to be sure. So you save. So now my database is all in the open. So never do this. But everybody can now start banging my server. And if I do the same thing now again with Management Studio, you'll see that immediately, right away, I'm connected to my database. So like Nick was talking about, this is the name of the database. He was mentioning the fact that you can host multiple mobile services within the same database based on schema separation. So to show you how it looks like, my mobile service is called MSTDBLX 13. So you see that all my tables which I have are in that schema. So if I add now a new mobile service into the same database, it will just create a new schema for me, and I can have multiple applications, multiple services running on the same DB. So it's a great idea if you want to save resources. Why? Because every time you create a new SQL database on Azure, it's going to cost you at least some amount of money. And yeah, building apps for Windows Azure is also about building cost-effective apps. So what happens behind the scenes? So you have your administrator account, and the moment you create your mobile service, you're going to use that account to log in and to couple your mobile service to your database. But it's not really that account which is going to be used by the service itself to use the database. So to show you, in security for this database, you see that there is a new user, this one, which is a generated user by the platform, by Windows Azure, which is generated the moment you create your mobile service, and it's that user which is going to be used to access your DB. So it's not going to use your DBA account or your administrator account. So if you have a DBA asking, yeah, but you're using the admin account to create your service, true, but afterwards it's not that account which is going to be used, it's a separate one generated for you. So that's already a good thing. So basically, this guy is the owner of that schema, so he's allowed to do in that schema things what he wants to do. Secondly, Nick already mentioned it a little bit, but if we go to the mobile service and you go to data to configure, you also see here that dynamic schema is set to on, which means that, like Nick showed you, if he calls the .user ID and points the user.user ID value to that property, the schema is automatically going to be updated and a new column is going to be added. So that's basically the way you work with mobile services, so that the schema is generated for you, that you don't have to write scripts for it, but still it's possible to do. If you don't want this, you just disable this dynamic schema stuff and you can manage your schema yourself. There are only a few guidelines, like you see in my Management Studio. Every table needs at least an ID, which is an identity column. Of a begins, and it's not nullable, so it's an identity column, and that's the only requirement. So for the rest, you can add columns of any type you want, and basically it's going to map all the types you use in C# or any other language directly to the types in SQL. So that was basically about showing, if you want to start from a new database, how you can use Management Studio to work with your data. From the second thing which we implemented is storing the data on Azure. So how did we do that? If you start up the application the first time, I already have it, but you can open the settings, and like I said this morning, enable synchronization. So the moment you enable synchronization, is going to ask you for the login. So it's basically the same as Nick showed you with Twitter, but we used a Microsoft account for that, because we just wanted to make sure everybody who is using Windows 8 or Windows Phone is supposed to have a live ID. So that's why we chose for that and not for for Twitter. So how does it work? What Nick already showed you is this page where you register your app for the store and where you link it. So at the moment until yesterday were 426 downloads of the app. So when creating an app here, it's also going to create a placeholder for the app in the Live Connect Developer Center, which is this one. And it's here that you can connect the live services to log in with a Microsoft account into your application. So it's quite hidden, like Nick showed you. So you go to Edit Settings, API Settings, and there you see your client ID, your client secret, and the domain, which is the redirect domain, which is exactly the same settings as you would be setting on Twitter, but now for Microsoft account. And you go back to your portal, you go to Identity, and instead of filling in the Twitter section, you're just filling in the Microsoft account settings, and all set. So. From a code point of view, you have your mobile service. So I wrapped it into another class so that I can inject it into my code. So you see that I'm just initializing a new mobile service client with this URI, and I removed my app key. If you're integrating a thing like this, you have a shared key which you can use to authorize your calls to the backend. Now with Windows 8 apps, it's a little bit tricky, because it means every app you install in your local machine through the store, you can just find them on your machine and decompile them and just go into the code and find the key of any API you're calling. So if you're using Twitter, Bing, Windows Azure Mobile Service, anything, and you use this way of working and you use your key, be aware that anybody who installs your app can just decompile it with Reflector or with .peek, find the code where you're using this line, steal your key, and do whatever he wants to on your backend. So be aware of that. That you never should do this. You should make sure that you or remove your key. How do you do that? By making sure that every call to the backend needs to be authenticated, or you remove the key by obfuscating your code. So for the rest, there's not really something special to talk about. You see, it's the normal thing. So I get a reference to the table. To get my filters, I get a reference to the filter table. I do where, based on the synchronization token, which is the live ID token I use to synchronize between the two, I get the a list of all the results, all my filters, and I give back the first one. So now what was special about this is that the token you receive back, you saw it with Twitter as well, is in the form of Twitter, double point, and then some number. And for Microsoft account, it's the same. Now, you cannot use that ID to go to the live API to fetch data. So what I, for instance, wanted to do, I wanted to call the live API to fetch some extra data of the user, which can be his first name, his last name, some user ID, some email address. And I needed that data, because at the phone side, the mechanism is not using Windows Azure Mobile Service, it's Live SDK. And to sync the two, I needed to do a special trick. And that's just what you see here. After I call the login async with Microsoft account, I added an operation which is called getMe. Now, for everything which you do in mobile services, it's not required always to do operations on a table. Like the meeting, I just implemented a script. And the script is not reading from a table. It's just doing something custom. And so you can implement a mobile service to do whatever you want. You can implement a mobile service to go to the Facebook Graph API, to do the live API like I did, to go to a database, to go to storage, to fetch some files, to do a download of an image, anything. It doesn't have to work always with a database. It's normally made for that, but you can use it like this one for something else. So what did I do here? So you get the user object. You can ask the identities from that user. And if I'm currently using Microsoft, I'm going to ask the access token from that Microsoft ID. And that is the access token I can use to call the live API to fetch some data. If not, I'm going to respond back to the user that I'm not supporting anything else than Microsoft account for the moment. So if you would use Twitter, this would fail. I'm calling a function, and I'm just going to do, in this case, just going to do a plain HTTP request, not going to the database, to fetch from the live API the me object based on my access token. And if that is successful, I'm going to parse the JSON I get back from the live API, and I'm going to create a new object, a new JSON object named with the ID, the name, the first name, the last name, some details I get back from the live API. So in case I want to add the email addresses, I need to call the live API instead of me with emails, and I can fill this up with an array of all the email addresses linked to that user. And the moment I get back in my code, I just fill the me object. So basically, for Windows Azure Mobile Services, it's like the data is coming from a table, but behind the scenes, it's not. And I'm just filling up this object so that I have all the details of that user available for me. So that's for the authentication part. So remember that you're not required to use tables, that you can do any custom script that you want. So for inserting data, I also did something special. So I want to optimize the communication between client and server as much as possible. And basically, the table was in the beginning, it was a pretty simple table. You had a user ID, and you had a session ID, and a version. To know when it was the last time that you synchronized, so that I know at which site you changed the last time. Now, the problem with that was that if I do a read from a table, and you favorited, for instance, 20, 25 sessions, and I had to pull 25 records over the wire, and every time I do a change, send 25 records or do a delete back to the server. So I wanted to optimize that. So how did I do that? I changed that column, and instead of keeping one session ID, I'm just concatenating all session IDs into one string, comma separated, because in this case, I didn't need to do any queries based on the separate session IDs. So I just added one column, which has all the session IDs in one field. So how do I do that back inside? Because that's something which you cannot do out of the box with mobile services. So when you do an insert, it's pretty simple. I get the favorite table, get table. I get all the ones I do aware based on the user ID. If it's a success, then I'm going to do an update or insert. So in case I'm as a user, I don't have any favorites yet, I'm going to do an insert. In the other case, I'm going to update the same record. Why? To avoid always doing a delete and an insert, so I'm going to update the same record to keep the same ID. If there is a favorite found, I'm going to keep the get the first one from the array, change the version, and do the session IDs.join with a comma. So basically, any JavaScript function you used to work with, you can implement here in the backend. So that's why the join on an array based on string is available. And I'm going to update it and respond to the user that it was successful, that it was HTTP 200. In the other case, I'm going to do an insert, and I'm just putting the user ID, the version, and I'm doing the join as well, and doing an insert. Now, on the read, I have to do the opposite, because I want to get back the correct data. So how do I do it at the client side, at the read side? When it's a success, I'm going to convert the results. So what do I do? In case there's results found, I'm going to get the records. I'm going to make an array of session IDs, and I'm going to split on a comma. And because I want the JSON array in my code, I want an array of ints in my code. I'll show you the object. So I'll take favorite. So I want here an array of integers instead of a string array, so that I don't have to parse that string again in code. So that's why I did it in the backend. So I just do a split on comma, and for each result I find back, I'm just going to push that result into my array, which is part of my JSON object, and I'm just going to call request.response HTTP 200 with the result I get back. So with the array I just created, with the object I just created. And that's basically how the backend side of the Windows Azure Mobile Service is used to synchronize data between the phone and the Windows 8. So there's not that much more to tell. I also seen the filters, but those are much simpler. And this is, I think, yeah, this is it. The only thing I can still show you is this. I scaled it up this morning. So I started with a free one, like Nick showed you at the end. So I just had a free, in a shared mode. So, but this morning I saw that there were some timeouts. So I decided to scale up. So I changed quickly to reserved and scaled to two instances. But if I now notice in my logs that it's not enough, so I can always go to the dashboard and see what the peaks are. So then you should see, what the peaks are in CPU calls, how many times the API is called, what the data out is, how much data I'm consuming. It was not much, but I was still getting some peaks on API calls, the number of times the synchronization was done. So that's why I decided to scale from a shared mode to reserved mode with two instances. So I think for the apps which we built for the Windows 8 part, it was pretty simple because you saw we did it with the SDK. But on the phone side, because we decided to go for phone 7 application, there is the SDK, there is no SDK yet. So at that site, we just implemented REST, plain REST, and it's some HTTP calls you do, and it was pretty working pretty well. So if you have any questions, feel free to come to the front and ask Nico me about if you want to know more. Thanks for joining this session. I hope you enjoyed, and enjoy the rest of the day. You don't see that.